From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. As Amazon warehouse workers in Bessemer, Alabama, wrap up a high-profile weeks-long process of voting to join a retail workers' union, Senator Bernie Sanders last week shone a spotlight on the absurd inequality that American workers experience. This is how he opened the hearing.
We're going to talk about the obscenity of the 50 wealthiest Americans now owning more wealth than the bottom half of our society. 50 people, half of our people, 160 million people. While at the same time, over 90 million Americans are uninsured, have no health insurance, or are underinsured, can't afford to go to a doctor when they get sick. Is that the America that we want? I don't think so. We'll be asking about how it happens that the top one-tenth of 1% now owns more wealth than the bottom 90%. One-tenth of 1%, more wealth than the bottom 90%, and two individuals, Bezos and Musk, now own more wealth than the bottom 40%. And meanwhile, we're looking at more hunger in America than at any time in decades. As you may know, I asked Mr. Bezos to testify at this hearing. He declined my invitation, and that's too bad, because if he was with us this morning, I would ask him the following question, and that is, Mr. Bezos, you are worth $182 billion. That's a B. $182 billion. You're the wealthiest person in the world. Why are you doing everything in your power to stop your workers in Bessemer, Alabama, from joining a union so that they can negotiate for better wages, better benefits, and better working conditions? The American people are increasingly disgusted with the corporate greed they are experiencing every single day. They're sick and tired of corporate CEOs who now make 320 times more than their average employees, while at the same time give themselves big bonuses, all kinds of golden parachutes, and yet they cut back on the health care that their workers have.
And that's Senator Bernie Sanders, chair of the Senate Budget Committee, last week introducing a hearing on inequality in the United States. He had invited Jennifer Bates, an Amazon worker, to discuss the union efforts in Bessemer, Alabama, as well as Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos. Bates accepted the invitation, but as Sanders said, Bezos did not. Also invited to speak at the hearing was my guest, Sarah Anderson. She's director of the Global Economy Project at the Institute for Policy Studies and a frequent guest on our program. Welcome back, Sarah.
Great to be here. Thank you.
So first, let me just ask you, how does Sanders' position as the new Senate Budget Committee chair in and of itself help change the conversation in Washington, D.C.? He's been at it for just a couple of months, and he held this really important hearing at which you were invited.
It's incredible to see the issues that ordinary Americans really care about get this kind of attention. A few weeks ago, he did one on the minimum wage with workers from McDonald's and Walmart, and this one focused more on the broader picture around inequality and CEO pay. And I think it's just thrilling to see these issues get this level of attention.
So let's talk about what it was that you came to discuss before we get to Amazon. Your specialty, and we've talked about this before, is executive excess, absurd amounts that CEOs are paid. Of course, you also study lots of other economic issues. But what were you asked to focus on at the hearing?
Yeah. Well, Senator Sanders introduced a bill that day called the Tax Excessive CEO Pay Act. So they wanted me to come and give some context for why this kind of bill is so important. What the bill would do is increase taxes on companies that have huge gaps between their CEO and their median worker pay. So the larger their pay gap, the higher their tax rate. And this is a bill that was also introduced on the House side. And again with quite a number of co-sponsors on in both chambers. And I'm just really excited about the possibilities for moving forward on a solution like this to the extreme levels of CEO pay relative to worker pay. They've been running over the past century, in the 21st century, about 350-1. And what's really obscene, I find, is that during the pandemic crisis, what we're seeing are corporate boards actually bending the rules to ensure that their CEOs will continue to get their massive paychecks, and doing that at a time of so much suffering for working families.
So this bill that Sanders introduced would basically tax excessive CEO pay. It's not as though it would in any way impoverish CEOs, right? How is this different from or similar to the wealth tax for millionaires that Elizabeth Warren introduced?
Well, this would be a tax on corporations, and it would kick in at corporations that have gaps between their CEO and median worker pay of more than 50-1. And then there would be graduated rates. So the highest tax penalties would go to companies that have gaps of more than 500-1. And we found that there are quite a number of big companies in the United States with gaps of more than 1,000-1. So a lot of the big companies would pay extra taxes if they continue to refuse to rein in these gaps between CEO and worker pay. So it doesn't actually put a cap on how much CEOs can make, but the companies that refuse to narrow these gaps will owe more to the IRS.
Right. They could simply narrow the gaps by paying their workers more. They don't have to give their CEOs a pay cut. They can just give their workers a pay raise.
We hope they'll do both. We hope they'll rein in the top end and lift up the bottom. And if they refuse to do that, they'll pay more taxes, which we can use in ways to fight inequality. So I see it as a win-win situation. The wealth tax comes at it from a different angle. That's a tax on individuals who have on how much wealth they've accumulated over the years. I think we need a full toolbox of different kinds of tax proposals to address the extreme wealth and income concentration in this country. So I really welcome the debate around the wealth tax as well.
Now, just on Monday, we saw new research that showed tax evasion amongst America's wealthiest because they've basically managed to escape IRS audits. The Wall Street Journal reported this, saying the top sliver of high-income Americans dodged significantly more in income taxes than the Internal Revenue Service's methods had previously assumed. The top 1% of households failed to report about 21% of their income. New York Times put out an editorial promoting the Stop Cheaters Act that Congressman Ro Khanna of California had introduced in February. It seems as though a lot of these progressive lawmakers are able to at least bring up legislation to start addressing, you know, the tax evasion, the excess pay, the absurd, all of the things that fuel the absurd inequality in the United States, right? But of course, they still need the Senate to be able to pass it, and the Senate still deals with the filibuster.
Well, we are very hopeful, though, that in the COVID recovery package that will start moving in the spring or the summer, we don't know exactly the timeline, but now that the COVID relief bill is done, we'll move on to COVID recovery. And we're expecting a lot of tax proposals on how to ensure that big corporations and the wealthy pay their fair share to be put into that package. And that will also likely be handled under the budget reconciliation rules, which can be passed through just a straight majority. And so if all the Democrats hold together, or if some of the Republicans come on board with these fair tax ideas, in addition to what we're hoping will be a lot of public investment in green technology and infrastructure projects to really jumpstart the economy again, we could see some of these pass because they'll need revenue for that big investment strategy to get ourselves out of the pandemic crisis. And we could actually see some of these things not just be in the spotlight, but actually become law.
Right. Where will the money come from to pay for it? Ask the Republicans. There's plenty of money. It's at the top. There's many different ways to get that money, either enforcing existing tax laws, passing new tax laws, and all of the above. I want to turn back to Amazon, which was the focus of last week's hearing where you spoke. How does or why does this company symbolize so much of what is wrong with the current state of corporate issues and how corporations are taking advantage of workers in America? Bezos chose not to appear, but Jennifer Bates, an Amazon worker, did appear.
Yeah, and she was so powerful. So she's one of the workers at the Bessemer, Alabama plant that has been in the process of a vote on whether to have a union in the workplace at that plant in Alabama. It's a plant that is overwhelmingly made up of Black workers, I think about 80%. And if they win this vote, it would be truly historic because they would be the first U.S. workers for Amazon to be unionized. And I think that no matter how the results go, they have done such a great job of putting a spotlight on the problems for workers at Amazon. One of her stories that just really stuck with me was that she described how on one of her first days on the job, imagine she's working in a warehouse that's the size of 3 football fields and it's 4 stories tall, and she needed to go up to the 4th floor. So she started to get into an elevator and someone stopped her and said, "No, the elevators are only for the merchandise. They're not for the people who work here." And, you know, it's the indignities like that at a company that is run by Jeff Bezos, the richest man in the world. And during the pandemic, his personal fortune has grown by something like $70 billion. It's hard to keep track day by day, but it's just an absurd amount of money that he's actually increased in his fortune during the pandemic, while his workers have been just hustling so hard to keep the economy going with very limited time for bathroom breaks. And he can't even see to it that they have elevators to get from one floor of their buildings to the other.
Now, Jeff Bezos could, you know, pay all of his workers really, really well and not even notice it in his bank account. I mean, it's pocket change for him to give all of his workers a massive raise. But of course, it's not about that, right? Because Amazon boasts that it treats its workers very well, which of course the reality is extremely different. But that's their justification for why the workers shouldn't have a union, because a union will somehow hamstring them. And meanwhile, they could just win all of these wonderful things that Amazon claims it wants to give them or is already giving them without a union. But the point is that workers have the right to organize collectively against the company simply because the company can't be trusted to do it voluntarily, right?
Yeah, I mean, that line is just absurd. And instead of spending his money to raise his worker pay or benefits, they've been spending it on a union busting campaign. And Jennifer Bates at the hearing explained very clearly how the workers are just surrounded by anti-union propaganda when they go in the restrooms, when they get text messages from their boss, they're sent to meetings with their managers. And sadly, she told me before the hearing started that some workers voted very early in the union election, but now that they've heard about a perspective that's different from the company perspective, they actually wish they could change their vote and vote for the union. So it's going to be really interesting to see how that turns out. But yeah, they're worried that if they vote in a union in Bessemer, Alabama, that workers in many of their other facilities in the United States and in some other countries might think that they want the right to collective bargaining as well. And of course, that's what we're hoping will happen. But yeah, this idea that because you have a minimum wage of $15 an hour means you don't need a union is just ridiculous. Airline pilots have unions, nurses have unions, Hollywood actors have unions. Labor rights are human rights, and they shouldn't be denied to someone just because somebody like Jeff Bezos thinks you don't need to make any more money.
Now, Sarah, alongside yourself and Jennifer Bates, was Scott Winship, Director of Poverty Studies at the American Enterprise Institute. I was sort of surprised to see somebody from AEI being invited to the hearing. This is a conservative, fiscally conservative think tank. What did Scott Winship have to say?
Well, he was there because he was chosen by the Republicans to be a witness. So the Democrats got three choices, and then the Republicans got two. And he tried to make the rather, unusual argument that we really don't have an inequality problem. We don't have a poverty problem in this country, that all of the research around the world that has all shown that we've had a huge jump in inequality in most countries, but, you know, most severely, or the U.S. is one of the most severe cases, that is somehow all bogus. He's been on this for a while, saying that people aren't really as poor as you think because of their purchasing power. Many people have, it's typical to have a refrigerator or a television today, whereas it wasn't, in the 1950s. That's part of his argument.
So because they're not starving on a daily basis, they're not poor.
Yeah. And I thought it was telling that he did not get any follow-up questions. And I would say that overall the tone in the room there with the Republican senators was that it was pretty subdued. They did not, go after the Amazon worker. They did not try to defend Jeff Bezos or the extreme levels of CEO pay. I think that what Bernie Sanders is doing here, putting these really concrete examples of how inequality is playing out in people's lives, has put them back on their heels a bit. And, hopefully we will find some areas of common ground. Senator Lindsey Graham is the top ranking Republican on the committee. He talked about how he thinks we should try to find some common ground around antitrust to break up some of the big companies. He's mostly interested in breaking up the big tech companies that have been censoring President Trump. But who knows? I think they're hearing from their constituents. I know from my work on CEO pay for decades, ordinary Republican voters are as outraged about CEO pay as people on other ends of the political spectrum. In fact, there was a survey that showed that 52% of Republicans want to cap CEO pay relative to worker pay. So I tried to joke in the hearing that I was proposing much more moderate solutions than what a majority of Republicans support. So hopefully, some of that public attitude filters through a little bit to Republican officials in Congress.
Right. And Biden has also been floating ideas around progressive taxation in general as well. Right after the American Rescue Plan was passed and he signed it into law, he followed up with with the announcement that there would be forthcoming new tax proposals, especially targeting the nation's wealthiest. This coming from someone who has been at best a moderate Democrat in the past. Do you think that this is a good sign? I mean, at the very least, we've seen those tax reform bill that Republicans passed under Trump, which has resulted in the loss of billions of dollars from the U.S. Treasury as being a big part of the problem. Whenever Republicans ask, how do we pay for it? we could have paid for a lot if those corporations and wealthy folks that saved all their money on taxes and the tax reform bill hadn't been forced, didn't get that massive, massive windfall. So is it exciting to hear tax proposals even coming from the likes of Biden?
It's very exciting. I'm particularly impressed by his views, which he's been pretty consistent on for the past couple of years, to make people pay the same tax rate on income from their investments as income from actual work. So to raise the capital gains rate to the same level as income taxes. But he's got some other good ideas too. And beyond that, people in Washington are the only ones who really follow all of the nominations to different positions in the Biden administration, but we've been thrilled to see who he's been putting in place in charge of taxes at the Treasury, in his National Economic Council, and elsewhere. He's got people who've been out there with very bold ideas around wealth taxation, taxing financial transactions on Wall Street, and things like that. So it's really exciting to see what kind of opportunities we might see, and we might see it quickly, like I said, in this COVID recovery bill.
Right. Biden said that those making over $400,000 a year can expect to pay more in income taxes. And in general, there's this interesting rhetoric coming from the media that I'm wondering you can comment on. And of course, this is using the Republican framing. Are we in the era of where we've sort of returned to big government, or in other words, in the more reasonable framing of it, are we back? Have we entered an era where that government is fulfilling the role it was meant to fulfill, which is taxing its citizens in order to help all citizens?
Well, I like that latter framing better. I mean, we've been in the business of big government for a long time because of the size of our military budget. Mm. And you don't hear Republicans describing that as big government, but it clearly is. And I do think it should be on the table as far as how to shift our national priorities and to pay for some things is to downscale our off the charts military spending. But yeah, I mean, another highlight of the hearing was Senator Tim Kaine put up a chart where he showed the Republican tax plan that you were just talking about and the just passed American Recovery Plan and how they have how much they've benefited different income groups. And it just went like this, with the Republican tax plan primarily benefiting the top income groups and the American Rescue Plan primarily benefiting the low income groups. And so it really was a stark display of the shift in who's benefiting from big legislative packages.
Sarah, where can people read more of your work?
Yeah, the easiest place is to go to our Institute for Policy Studies website, inequality.org. My Senate testimony is up there and links to video of the hearing. And sign up for our inequality newsletter. You'll get a great amount of inequality data and solutions every week in your inbox.
That's inequality.org. Sarah, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Bye.
My guest has been Sarah Anderson, Director of the Global Economy Project at the Institute for Policy Studies. We've been discussing Bernie Sanders' hearing on inequality in the U.S. last week, at which Sarah was an invited speaker. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.